Hello, friends. This is Fred Dominguez. Those who study the development of human societies suggest that they evolved from a nomadic hunter-gatherer lifestyle in their most primitive forms to a permanently located agrarian lifestyle that was rural in nature, and from this then to an urban culture. The urban culture has continued to develop from the first rather small walled cities of ancient times, which still depended largely on agricultural pursuits, to trading and commerce, then industrial manufacturing, and ultimately to the large and diversified cities of today. We are told that in their more primitive forms, these early societies depended on a system of barter in which goods and services were exchanged within the community and with traders who might pass through the community. Eventually, the experts say, a system of money developed, generally concurrent with the discovery of precious metals. Over time, as the ability to make coins developed, money as we know it came into being. Some of this development is attested to in the scriptures, as Old Testament characters such as Abraham are said to have weighed out precious metals in payment for land and other things they wished to acquire. By the time of the New Testament, a system of coinage was in wide use, and there are numerous references in the New Testament to what we would call money. The convenience of carrying a bag of coins rather than sacks of raw gold or silver was enormous, and of course the modern conveniences of paper money, checks, and debit cards and such makes the possession and use of money even less obtrusive. And by the way, if you haven't noticed it yet, we are moving rapidly toward a time when money as a physical object may no longer exist. This has been theorized by science fiction writers and is in certain respects being promoted by banks and businesses who wish to do away with what we used to call float time, that is, the time it takes for one's check to reach the bank and to be debited from one's account. At any rate, everyone today recognizes the importance of money in our lives. Our challenge is to keep money in its proper place. For a few moments then today, let's consider an important warning about money from the inspired apostle Paul. Many of us have, at one time or another, heard someone say, "Money is the root of all evil." Now, the source for this statement is 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10. However, this is not what Paul said there. Not only this, we need to consider several other verses in that context in order to get a more complete understanding of what Paul had in mind. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 3 through 5, Paul spoke of those whose teaching constituted a departure from sound doctrine. He called them men of depraved mind and deprived of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. Now, this is really the heart of the matter. In Paul's time, some of those who taught a different doctrine were doing so in hopes of personal monetary gain. In other words, they tailored their message to appeal to those who would reward them financially for their efforts. Unfortunately, there are many still today whose teachings are tailored in the same way to satisfy large contributors so as to bring in more money for their quote-unquote ministries. It is in this context, then, that Paul spoke about the proper place of money in the lives of God's people. In verses 6 through 10, Paul said, "But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." Now, the most obvious point to be made here is the difference between what many people say about money and what Paul actually said. What he actually said is the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. Now, that's very different from money is the root of all evil, isn't it? To reach an appropriate understanding of what Paul said in verse 10, we need to make some observations about the entire context, including his instructions to those who are rich, which are found in verses 17 through 19 of the same chapter. We need to recognize, first of all, that the basis for Paul's statement is the idea of contentment. Those who were advocating a different doctrine were content neither with the truth of God's word nor with the physical blessings they received from proclaiming it. This is why they changed their doctrine. They were after more personal gain because they were discontented with what they had. In contrast to this, Paul said that great gain was to be attained only by being content with what one has. In verse 7, he evoked the memory of Job, Job chapter 1, verse 21, in saying that we brought nothing into the world and will take nothing out of it. Therefore, we should content ourselves with our daily necessities, that is, food and covering. This, by the way, is what Jesus taught in the model prayer. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 11, he said, "Give us this day our daily bread." He underscored it again in that same context when he discussed man's anxiety over food, drink, and clothing in Matthew chapter 6, verses 25 to 33. And his conclusion in verse 33 is powerful. He said, "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." From this, we see that lack of contentment can be an expression of shallow faith or a failure to seek God first in one's life. It can also be something else. It can be the result of greed. Now, the word greed does not appear in this text, but the idea is present there nonetheless. Notice that in verse 9, Paul spoke of those who want to get rich. He followed it up in verse 10 with a comment about those who long for money and thereby wander away from the truth or from the faith. These are statements which are more indicative of those who do not have money than of those who do. Certainly one who is already wealthy does not want to get rich because he already is. Furthermore, while one who has money may have an obsession with it, it is without a doubt the one who has no money or who thinks he doesn't have enough money who actually longs for it. Now, the Greek word translated longing in the New American Standard text from which I'm reading, or covet in some of the older translations, carries with it the idea of reaching or striving for something based upon evil or selfish desire. In other words, Paul in this statement is actually speaking against an unholy desire for money. And we know that it is an unholy desire because it causes the one so infected to stray from the faith. We notice also that in verse 10, where our English translations say love of money, Paul used the Greek word for avarice. Now, this is a word that has no positive connotation. Avarice is a selfish and miserly desire for money. It is a quality that brings to mind the image of Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. Here was a man consumed by wealth. He cared nothing for anyone but himself and the constant pursuit of more wealth. He is the very picture of the lack of contentment of which Paul spoke. Yet, we must understand that as Paul stated it in our text, avarice is not the province solely of the rich. Remember, in verse 9, he said that those who want to get rich fall into temptation. Avarice, then, can also infect those who are not yet wealthy, in addition to those who are wealthy. It is at this point that we should take a few moments to put wealth into its biblical perspective. We know that Jesus had no personal wealth. He did not even have his own home in which to live. From this, some have tried to make the case that there is virtue in poverty and sin in the possession of wealth. Jesus taught neither of these things, nor did he condemn wealth as a general point of doctrine. As a matter of fact, he depended on the generosity of some wealthy women who provided for his needs and for the needs of the 12 out of their own private means. Luke chapter 8 and verse 3 tells us of this. So rather than condemning wealth out of hand, the Lord had nothing to say against it unless it became an obstacle to faith, as in the case of the rich young ruler in Luke chapter 18. This same perspective was taken by the apostles, whose only condemnation of wealth was in the context of it keeping one from obeying the Lord as he should. In this respect, Paul made the same point in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19. Here's what he said: "Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed." So we see that according to Paul, the only restriction on the rich was that they use their wealth for good works and keep their hope and trust in God rather than in their wealth. From this, we see that one who has his heart set on God will be blessed, whether he is rich or poor. The one who puts God first in his life will receive eternal life, his wealth or lack thereof notwithstanding. It is not a sin, therefore, to work hard to be successful in life. Neither is it sinful to use whatever moral, ethical, and legal means which may be available to oneself in order to acquire wealth, so long as it is not based upon greed and evil, selfish desire. The fact is that if we put God first and if we live modestly and use our money wisely, we can all become far more wealthy than we think possible. It is all a matter of seeing money or wealth as God intended it. Someone has said that money is a great servant, but a terrible master. When we understand that wealth is a tool which is intended by God to be used for good, then the pursuit of it and the possession of it will not be obstacles to our obedience and our faith in the Lord. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, Paul spoke of one use for worldly wealth that absolutely falls within the ideas of faith and obedience. He said, "But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." Therefore, if one is working to acquire the wealth necessary to care for his extended family, including his aged parents, he is using wealth as his servant to do these good things. If, on the other hand, one's view of wealth is such that it is an object to be worshipped or spent on one's selfish desires, and if the pursuit of wealth only takes one farther and farther away from God, then wealth has become a master, and as such will reduce that individual to bondage of the worst kind. That bondage is played out day after day at the lottery outlets and gambling casinos all across our nation. Men and women will literally spend their family's food money in the hopes of striking it rich on the lottery. They will spend their last dollar for a scratch-off ticket and then hit up the church for food and clothing or help paying the light bill. Their hope is in money, not in God. Their desire, their greed, is for money, not the Lord's service. And consequently, their lives are in ruins, just as Paul warned in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. The love of money is indeed a terrible master, and unrepented of will lead souls to condemnation. Thinking about the things that we've studied together today, what is money in your life? Is it a servant or is it your master? Are you willing to work all hours to accumulate it but neglect the Lord's assembly in so doing? Is your heart set on getting money only to fulfill your selfish desires? Or is God the one on whom your hope is set? Money in and of itself is not evil, but the love of money is. Do not let the desire for money or the possession of money be an obstacle to your faith and obedience. Put God first and honor Him with the fruits of your labors. Thanks very much for listening today. Please join us again next time for Let the Bible Speak.